This is the Morning Drive Podcast from Double T 97.3, presented by Cantex Roofing and Construction.
I'm Mike Hebert, owner of Cantex Roofing and Construction. Every day is game day, and we'll get it right when it comes to your roofing, construction, windows, and mirrors. Call Cantex Roofing and Construction today. Together, we are one serving you.
All right, Jamie, I want to... Here's a question for you first that's tech baseball related, then I'll get to the Yankee situation. Is Owen Washburn okay after getting hit?
I did not listen to the coach's show last night, so I am unsure of that.
Okay. I guess we'll know if he's gets to play today. All right. Aaron Boone ejected by home plate umpire Hunter Windelstadt. His daddy, Harry Windelstadt, was a major league umpire for years and years and years. And the Windelstadts have an umpiring school. So they're schooling others, young minds, how to become umpires. This happened in the second at-bat of the ball game yesterday. For whatever reason, apparently Boone had been jawing at Windelstadt.
The previous batter checked his swing on a back foot breaking ball that came inside and hit the foot of the leadoff hitter.
Okay.
And so I think Boone was wanting him to check down the home plate umpire to check down to first to see if he went around. Eventually he did, because even if it hits you, if you go around on the swing, it's a strike. It's on a hit by pitch. The first base umpire said that he did not go around, and so it was listed as a hit by pitch. It could have gone either way. It was really close.
Okay, so then the second guy comes up, and I guess a fan behind Boone, you know, started jawing as well at Hunter Windelstadt, and then Windelstadt said basically something to the effect of one more thing and you're out, and then this guy said something, and then Windelstadt responded, I don't care who said it, you're out, because Boone said that he didn't say anything.
Well, he told Aaron Boone, that's it, I did my job, I checked down to first, he said he didn't go around, It's a hit by pitch. And Boone kept jawing, and then one more time he looked at Boone, and Boone looked at him, and he said, one more word from you and you're gone. And Aaron said, okay, raised his arms, okay, fine. And so he stopped. He didn't say another word. And he was watching the pitcher when this guy in the crowd, who was not too far, obviously, from the dugout, was having at it towards the umpire.
He's heckling.
Yeah, and that's when he turned and threw Boone out.
I guess part of my question for you is, it appears like that the baseball umpires are way more sensitive than referees in basketball and officials in football. Now, on one hand, you can say, well, with regard to football, the fans are much closer to the officials, to the umpires. And then with basketball, I mean, sometimes you're right there because you've got the front row Joe seats and things along those lines. And I've seen those guys get warned before.
Closer than baseball? Football closer than baseball?
No.
Okay.
Not closer.
I got...
Not closer.
I got twisted. My apologies.
So I guess my question is, are the baseball guys just way more sensitive? Because it seems like they're more sensitive to anything that the managers or the coaches say. Basically, you can't say anything to them or you get run out. As opposed to whether it's college or pro on the basketball side, it seems like there's a lot more back and forth that goes on between the officials and the coaches before a technical is ever issued. And seems like also there's a lot more conversation on the football side. It just seems like the baseball guys seem to be way more sensitive. And I'm curious if you share that observation.
I think we're completely missing the point here. He got tossed not because he was talking too much. He got tossed because I'm sure it's happened a million times over the year. Hey, one more word from you, and you're done.
Yeah,
and
no,
sometimes
I get that.
Managers say something, and sometimes they don't.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't say anything.
No, I know
the
that.
The story is that somebody in the crowd said something. The umpire mistook it for Aaron Boone.
I understand
and
that.
And he got tossed.
I understand that. But the other thing, though, too, is that, I mean, Harry Windelstadt or Hunter Windelstadt's got just rabbit ears that he's
well,
just...
Well, I mean, you... if you heard what Aaron Boone was saying, you probably understood why he was frustrated. Where he like, hey, we did what we were supposed to do. We made our call. Shut up. I think that's pretty normal.
We're like two batters in, though.
Well, Boone was frustrated two batters in.
No, I understand that, but I mean, it just seems like your fuse should be a little longer than that, unless there's a carryover from previous times, which there probably is. It just seems like the major league umpires are way more sensitive than the other officials. And first, and it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous for Boone to get thrown out because a fan said something.
Yes.
Now, I mean, it's completely ridiculous.
The bigger story here is that Boone went and said, "Hey, I didn't say anything." Mm-hmm. And I don't know the rules there, but it feels like he could have said, and they could have, I mean, everybody was like, no, it's that guy in the crowd.
Yeah.
And Boone came out and said, I didn't say anything. And he said, I don't care. You're still gone.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
you're still gone. It seems like at that point he could have said, okay, all right. I didn't realize that it was the fan and not mm-hmm. Boone and taken away that ejection.
Yeah.
Seems like he could have done that.
Sure, he could have.
And very easily explained that to the A's at that point.
Sure.
Hey, I thought it was him. It wasn't him. I'm not ejecting him.
The Joker back here, you know, yes. Behind home plate.
I mean, that's the story. I mean, the fact that we've had a similar conversation before about umpires, okay? I think umpires have a bigger chip on their shoulder than they used to. Because we as a society now have so much video of every time that they're wrong, mm-hmm. expecting them and not allowing them to be humans and saying, umpires aren't going to get it right every time. But we make such a big deal out of every time we're wrong and we got video of it and we plastered it all over social media. And I mean, we got fans at a Little League baseball game calling the home plate umpire Angel, okay, because they're taking a shot at Angel Hernandez. Okay, so as we as a society have become obsessive when every time they're wrong, we're going to point it out and you know, just overly promote it, they're going to get a bigger chip on their shoulder. They're going to fight back a little bit. And that's what we have going on right now, I think, with Major League umpires. Society has changed in how they handle it, and the umpires have fought back.
6:39 this morning here on the morning drive. Your thoughts, your comments on that. Yates Flooring Center chat line. My point on the whole deal is I just think the Major League umpires are way more sensitive than any of the other umpires that are out there. This day in sports history is next.
The Morning Drive podcast from Double T 97.3 is presented by Cantex Roofing and Construction.
Today is April the 23rd, 2024. Time for this day in sports history. Here is Jeff McGuire.
I'm going to start in 1914 because Major League Baseball Chicago Federals mm-hmm. host the Kansas City Packers in the very first game played at Wingham Park, now known as Wrigley Field.
Oh, nice.
With the Chicago Cubs and not the Kansas City Royals. But, you know, three things all from 1914, the things that we associate with that have different names now. 1939, big day. Boston Red Sox, Ted Williams, hits home run number one. Can't have two before you have number one.
That's fair.
We learned that earlier today, didn't we?
We did. 1946, Brooklyn Dodgers, Ed Head, no hits. The Boston Braves, 5-0. In 52, Bob Kane of the St. Louis Browns and Bob Feller of the Cleveland Indians each pitch a one-hitter.
Mm.
As the home team wins 1-0 at Sportsman Park in St. Louis, Missouri. 1954, Hammer and Hank Aaron hits home run number
one.
One of 755.
Wow.
1971. Ruben Garcia retires 19 straight batters and goes 8 innings to earn Texas Tech's fourth no hitter in a 1-0 win over Baylor.
Nice.
1978. Reds' Joe Morgan ends a record streak of 91 consecutive errorless games at second base. 2005 NFL Draft. University of Utah's quarterback Alex Smith, first pick by the San Francisco 49ers. And in 2008, Chris Richburg has 3 runs and 3 RBIs and seals a cycle with a home run in the 7th inning as the Texas Tech Red Raiders beat New Mexico State 16-10.
If you were hitting for a cycle, what would you want to do last?
I'd want to hit the home run last.
Triple.
I think I'd want the triple last. Yeah.
Because everybody is at that point going, he's just a triple shy. Yeah. He's just a triple shy.
Knowing that's the hardest one.
And when you get there and you're on the bag, you're standing there and everybody is cheering for you right there and you're still on the field.
Yeah.
As opposed to having to exit so the next guy can get up.
Yeah. It would be cool to just kind of Cadillac around too.
Yeah. Like that's kind of what I was thinking.
Like to take it all in.
Cadillac around. I'd like to Cadillac around sometime. That'd be a lot of fun.
I think you do a lot of Cadillacing.
Do you? Okay. Probably so. Mm-hmm. See, I don't think I do, but I probably do.
You kind of move about the building after the show. I hear you,
Cadillac.
I hear you and see you talking to other people. It's like a victory lap after finishing up 3 hours with me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Happy National Cherry Cheesecake Day and English Muffin Day.
I'm out on the English muffin.
I love a good English muffin.
I'm out on the cherry cheesecake. I'll take an English muffin a lot. Yep.
They're the start of one of my favorite breakfast sandwiches. Happy birthday to John Cena, who's 47. George Lopez, 63. Michael Moore, 70. Andrew Jones, 47. And Lee Majors is 85 today.
$6 million, man.
See, he's just the fall guy to me, man. And on this day, 1985... we go back to one of the worst decisions in marketing history. Coca-Cola Bottling Company announces that it's changing the formula of its signature soft drink for the first time in 99 years. Mm. The short-lived, sweeter New Coke, as it was called, debuts to a consumer backlash that pundits call the marketing blunder of the century. And that is this day in sports history.
Or was it? All right, it's time for your lucky local winning word. All you have to do is go to DoubleT973.com to get entered in. And guess what? You can't win $1 if you don't enter at least once. Today, we're going to give away $250 to somebody. Just, you know, kind of extra spending money. Maybe take your family out to dinner or, you know, pay an extra bill or something along those lines. It's all with DoubleT973 in the home zone, making your house a home. We're going to give up to $10,000 to somebody here, to someone's here in Lubbock. All you have to do to get registered is go to DoubleT973.com and then listen at this time every morning during the weekday, 8:45 and 4:45 during Tech Talk for the local winning word. The more times you enter, the more chances you have to win. This is not a national contest. All right, our lucky local winning word this morning at 6:50 is Cougars. Cougars, C-O-U-G-A-R-S. The Cougars are not a very good baseball team. Is that right, Jamie?
That is fair.
Okay.
Neither one of them. The Houston ones or the BYU ones.
Right, so the Cougars, C-O-U-G-A-R-S. Cougars is your lucky local winning word here at 6:50, thanks to DoubleT973 and the Home Zone, making your house a home. Okay, so going back to...
And now, for a morning drive update.
Oh. I'm aware of this.
Mike Gustafson helps out because he is a fantastic human being and should be praised for his efforts. Mm-hmm. Richburg cycle was a natural cycle, hitting the single, double, triple, and home run. Mm. And then he got drilled in the 9th. Game played on the campus of New Mexico Military Institute.
Okay.
From Mike Gustafson.
Very
so,
nice.
So shout out to him.
And that's walking around back pocket knowledge for him. He didn't have to Google that to find that out.
Of course he didn't.
No.
But he's that good.
But you have that too. You have that back pocket knowledge as well. I was going to give you just a little insight on the Wrigley Field deal. Charles Wegman, who the field was named after, was actually a baseball executive. The guy that owned the club was a guy by the name of Charles P. Taft, no relation to the former president. And then he sold it to William Wrigley and a syndicate that was headed up by William Wrigley, the chewing gum manufacturer. But it took them until 1926 to rename the park Wrigley Field.
Mm.
Okay, so he didn't immediately just put his name on it, you know, there in 1918 when he acquired the controlling interest in the Chicago Cubs. Took until 26 before they put Wrigley's name on it. And then in 1927, they added the upper deck. And in 1937, Bill Veeck, the son of the club president, planted ivy vines against the outfield walls after seeing ivy planted at Perry Stadium in Indianapolis. So that's the genesis of the ivy there at Wrigley Field.
How many clubs was he associated with? Cubs, White Sox, Royals, I think?
No, no Royals.
He wasn't with the Royals?
No.
He was with somebody else. A's maybe?
I was thinking Cardinals, but I may be wrong about that. But the Veeck family was, you know.
Must have been low.
Here you go. At various times, the owner of Cleveland Indians, St. Louis Browns, and the Chicago White Sox.
So why did he plant the ivy at Wrigley
Field?
Oh, his son did. Okay.
Because they saw a similar ivy at a stadium in Indianapolis, and they must have thought it was cool. So there you go. And that is this day in sports history, and then some. 6:53 this morning here on the Morning Drive. Take your thoughts and comments on the Yates Flooring Center chat line. Go to TT973.com for that, of the mobile app. Robert, who is a Yankee fan, says this: the power to eject has to be taken away from them. They don't deserve to have that anymore. It does seem like...
Robert, go get a cup of coffee, man.
It does seem like the slightest bit of protest, the Major League guys are like, off with your head. And it's kind of that way in college baseball, too. You don't get really to... You don't get the opportunity to really argue. You have to go just challenge the play, right?
I would love for you to go sit in the front row or in the dugout and listen to how much these teams, these coaches chirp the home plate umpire. It's not just the slightest bit.
I know, but I'm talking about going out there and running and, you know, getting belly to belly with them, turning your cap around so that you don't hit them.
There is a lot of chirping going on that umpires allow. It's just part of the game. You're only seeing the moments when guys get ejected and say, oh, they're overly sensitive. It's the first thing he said. They've been talking the whole time.
Just before 7 this morning here, I'll defer to you.
The Morning Drive podcast from Double T 97.3 is presented by Cantex Roofing and Construction.
All right, this was down the pike yesterday, Jamie. The NCAA Division I board has now approved legislation, this is according to CBSSports.com, to allow instant eligibility for all multi-time transfers, okay? This was a decision that was announced yesterday. There is one more step, but I think this is kind of a rubber stamp kind of deal after this board approves it. The new guidelines go in effect immediately. So the NCAA Division I board has approved this. The board's approval was the final step, so to correct myself there, in adopting the new rules after the Division I council voted in favor of the changes last week. These guidelines go into effect immediately. Under the new guidelines, transfers will have to remain in good standing, meet academic eligibility, and progress toward degree requirements in order to receive immediate eligibility. The rules didn't become fully official until they were ratified by the board, which met on Monday. This ruling does not apply to grad transfers because they were already in that situation of immediate eligibility at new institutions. So basically, as long as you're getting, you know, in good standing and you're working towards your degree, which seems like pretty basic stuff, you're free to move about the country basically however you want to do. You can go from school to school to school without having to sit out. So that ends that. This comes after a federal injunction that led to a temporary halt on NCAA rules requiring multi-time transfers to sit out a season, making all transfers immediately eligible. Okay, this was all part of some lawsuits that were filed by West Virginia basketball player Raekwon Battle and then attorney generals from 7 states. Battle went on to play 22 games for West Virginia. What's your immediate thought on that? Is that just, okay, it is what it is, kind of move on?
Yeah, really, that's, I know you guys don't believe me.
No, I do believe you.
I really don't care with the transfer rules. I just, it's a different world, and I've accepted that. And when they are wearing the red and black, I'll be happy they're wearing the red and black. And otherwise it's crazy to me. And it's just get with the times, Jamie, figure it out, you know? And I think I'm getting closer to that. I've accepted that. And, so it is what it is. In my world, you don't transfer, you shouldn't be allowed to transfer at all without either sitting out a year or losing a year.
Yeah, I feel that way too.
Okay, and that's clearly been stated that you don't have to do that. So I really don't care. I really don't. So that's, I guess that's good for the student athletes. I guess that's, we as fans have to know that everything's just year to year. Every player, it's just year to year.
Yeah.
Every single player. So don't get too comfortable. Don't get attached to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It's just, they're just here year to year. And the decision to move may be based on their playing time. That may be based on somebody else is offering them more NIL money.
That
may be
that in a second.
Based on whatever. And there's nothing that keeps them from transferring. So just know that. Just know that. And so, me as a guy in this business and as a fan, don't sit around thinking, okay, well, that guy's already transferred once, so he's not going to be able to transfer. No. Know that everything is just year to year.
Right.
Just year to year.
So, and it's funny because I really didn't even – because here's what it's come down to. Yesterday, Chance McMillan announced that he was coming back to Texas Tech. Okay. I mean, should we – I guess we have to expect this every year that these guys are going to announce when they're coming back, even though they've got eligibility back with you. He started one game last year. He averaged 10.8 points a ball game, 4 rebounds a contest. He was a 91% free throw shooter, 40 of 44. He was tied for second in threes made for you at 65. Kerwin Walton also had 65, and Pop Isaac, who's announced that he is moving on, had 73. But Chance had a three-point percentage of 39% and shot 48% from the field. So it's great that he's coming back. I just had kind of already assumed that he was coming back.
Yeah, that's another part that's really great about all of this is it allows the kiddos to get on social media and, look at me at themselves a little bit more.
Yeah, right.
So I know that we're all a huge fan of that.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm with you, Chuck. I thought that was a done deal. I thought that was a given. I didn't think that we, but I mean, probably in defense of Chance McMillan, he's seen everybody else getting love on social media and
where's mine?
I should be rewarded for staying with a school. So somebody needs to retweet me and like my tweet and tell me how excited they are about me, too. So.
Right. Well, we...
Looking for love in all the wrong places, Chuck.
Should we announce, like, every day, like,
No.
We're coming back? No?
No, we shouldn't, because we are
just
well-adjusted adults that should be able to understand the importance of not needing that to make us feel good about ourselves.
Yeah.
Us? Well-adjusted?
Yeah.
You, maybe. I'll give you.
I'm trying to talk the three of us into that, Jeff.
Yeah, I once worked with a guy who, at the end of every one of his on-air shift, would basically say, "My name is Jim Davis from Turkey Hill, Missouri. It's been good doing business with the likes of you." And I said, "Why do you do that every day?" He goes, "Because I never know when my last shift's going to be, and I'm going to sign off every shift just like that because it's my last shift." And One day, unbeknownst to all of us, this guy that we thought we knew was arrested at the radio station, charged with stealing a rental car that we thought was his car, and apparently there'd been some accusations of extortion, of trying to kill an ex-wife, and he ended up in the clink, and then after he was exonerated after all that stuff, we rehired him again. Not me, but the station did.
Must have been a heck of a DJ. Yes.
And the only reason that they found this guy out was that the sheriff's office came by the radio station to give me a flyer about a charity basketball game that they were promoting. And I was out like I was supposed to be out doing what I'm supposed to be doing during the day. And Jim said, well, I'll take that for you. Chuck's not here right now. And the sheriff's officer went back to his post, and he was thinking, Jim Davis, Jim Davis, Jim Davis, Jim Davis, Jim Davis, Jim. That name sounds familiar. And then he plugged it into the computer and went, whoa, this guy's wanted for stolen car, extortion, all this other stuff. And I got back to the station, and they were loading up his car on on the back of a tow truck.
Sweet.
Was it a rental car that he stole?
He just never returned it.
So he stole it?
He stole it.
Okay.
And we always wondered why he never replaced the dummy wheel, you know, those idiot tires that are only supposed to go like 23 miles.
The donuts?
Yeah, the donut. He went like, I don't know, 1,000 miles on this thing.
That's impressive. They're not supposed to last that long.
But he couldn't take it in to get it fixed because then they would discover that it was a stolen car.
Yeah.
Where was his car? He did not have one?
I have no idea. Apparently not.
So many questions. So little time.
Apparently not. All right. So NIL, got a little word on that. We'll get to that at some point in time this morning. There's other things I want to get to as well, but I didn't want to get your take on that. But first, we'll have Jamie's question of the day, which is next here this morning.
This is the Morning Drive Podcast from Double T 97.3, presented by Cantex Roofing and Construction. Jamie's question of the day on Double T 97.3, presented today by someone not named Jamie, is brought to you by Kinetico of West Texas.
All right, gentlemen, as you can hear, we've got some NFL film music in the background. Mm-hmm. We're thinking of frozen tundras, and we're thinking of the NFL draft.
Yeah, it's coming up. I'm excited about it.
Chuck Hines, 32. Jamie Lint, drafting for the Buffalo Bills at 28. Mm-hmm. And I will be drafting for the Dallas Cowboys at 24. Mm. What do you want your respective teams to do with their draft pick? Mm. I do not need a player. I am not going to make you go through 85,000 college athletes, figure out who you want to draft. What position group, or what would you like to see your team do with their first round draft pick on Thursday night?
You know, I feel like the Chiefs are always going to have the skill position players that they need. I mean, they just signed Chris Jones to help them on a defensive line standpoint to be someone that can always, you know, attack the quarterback. I just think you always got to be worried about what's going on up front for Patrick Mahomes. So I want the best offensive lineman that you can get and help that guy, you know, kind of add to the depth or, you know, take over a spot that maybe was a weakness or maybe a hole because of a free agency.
I will take a guy that can get past Chuck's guy and get to Patrick Mahomes. I want the best pass rusher available.
Yeah.
As I look at the Cowboys drafting at 24, and I look at how they're positioned right now, I don't feel like there's anybody that's going to help the Cowboys this year get to where they need to be. And that's not a knock on the draft, because I think there's some really good players in this draft. But it's too many holes to fill. Jerry, for the love of everything holy, trade out of the first round. Get a first round pick next year and a third round pick this year for your first round pick. Start stockpiling some picks, because you're going to have to do this on the cheap, because you're going to do a dumb thing in a minute and pay Dak Prescott $900 billion and Micah Parsons $900 billion and CeeDee Lamb $900 billion and then wondering why you can't get anybody else. The reason the Cowboys have been so quiet this offseason is because they have nothing to do. They have nothing. They look at their salary cap and go, well, I could go buy a Coke. Not a new Coke, as we talked about on this day in history. Get out of the first round. Use that pick for next year. And
accumulate some draft stock that you can use in the future, because this year we are not in a good position.
I kind of feel like, Chuck, that Jeff asked the question just so he could rail on Jerry Jones somewhere.
I'm begging Jerry Jones to trade out of the first round.
Just for an excuse to be angry with Jerry Jones.
Yeah.
You get that sense?
Yeah.
I asked the question because it's Thursday night and we haven't talked about the NFL draft at all.
No, I understand that. I mean, we've had a lot of baseball to talk
about. And I'm not complaining.
Yeah.
But this is a topic we have not touched at all.
It's so...
And it's Thursday night with the first round.
So subjective, though. You know, with regard to, you know, who... There's so many... I think the thing that's going to be interesting to me is... because I do think the Cowboys are going to sign Dak and Micah Parsons to an extension or a new deal, and that will give them some salary cap relief for this year. But it will be interesting, because if they do trade out, that almost feels like, okay, are they bailing on this year, and what does that mean for Mike McCarthy? Because, I mean, all Mike McCarthy has done during the regular year is basically win 12 games, but he can't get past the second round of the playoffs.
What do the Cowboys, if you were to say that the Cowboys are one player away, what position is that?
I don't think they're one player away, though. I think you're minimum two offensive linemen away. I think you're a wide receiver away. I think you're a couple of defensive backs away. And you're not going to get that in your first three rounds of the NFL draft this year.
I think I would, of all the things that Jeff mentioned there, I would go to defensive back. I feel like that's the biggest immediate need. I don't disagree with the offensive lineman part of it. I don't worry about the wide receiver position at this point.
And you're also a quarterback away, but that's a different conversation for a different day.
How about linebacker?
Yeah, no, that's a good one too.
You know, because you're kind of been a little thin there, and you know, with some injuries and things like that, defections, all those things.
Well, yeah. Obviously, you lose Van Der Esch, and then you lose Overshown at the beginning of last year, which, who knows, it looked like he was going to be a pretty good player for you, too. So, hopefully he'll be back and be a big factor.
Oddly enough, Texans not drafting in the first round this year. They traded it to Cleveland.
How much attention... I don't even know why I'm asking this question. How much attention will you pay to the NFL draft?
I will be interested to see, you know, what goes down. I'm somewhat interested with what's going down with all these quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm definitely interested in what the Cowboys and the Bills elect to do.
Mm-hmm.
Thursday night, that's the night of Serpent Invasion comes on, Chuck. And
I don't know what that is.
That's my favorite show, so okay. I'll miss at least an hour of Thursday night's draft.
Even more than squatting for Sasquatch?
You know, usually I shoot with the kid on Thursday nights, so there's just other things that sometimes get in the way. I'm interested in those things.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't mean that I'm going to sit down and watch those things.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Sure. I mean, and you know that I will, because I'm anxious to see how everything goes.
Yeah.
I'm going to analyze the suits of the guys that come out.
I know it's not per se a sporting event, but it affects sports, so I'm interested.
Yeah.
Okay, but I'm more interested in watching events.
Mm-hmm.
But I will definitely, you know, when I'm done doing whatever I'm doing, I'll pull out my phone and see what happened, what I missed.
Okay. Cowboys draft 24th in the first round, 56th in the second round. They draft with the number 87 overall pick in the third round.
Your daily dose of sports and fun. This is the Morning Drive Podcast from Double T 97.3, presented by Cantex Roofing and Construction.
Thank you for being with us today. So some new rules for college football. We're going to have a two-minute warning this year. I'm really excited about this. I've been wanting this for a long, long time. I'm kind of giddy over it, to be quite honest with you, because I think it'll kind of change the end of half, end of game strategy a little bit. And here's Coach Joey McGuire with his true thoughts on the two-minute warning.
Yeah, I know there's been a lot of, you know, I follow, you know, guys, I follow everything whenever it comes to social media and reading a lot of different stuff. I mean, there's been a lot of kind of like, why do we have the two-minute warning? I think it's going to be good, you know, because if you think about it, at the end of the game, when you haven't hit your TV timeouts, you get a touchdown, and they go, we kick the field goal, and they go to a timeout, and then all of a sudden we kick the ball off, and then they go to the timeout because they're trying to get all their time, their TV timeouts in. They're going to get a certain number of TV timeouts. So the way I look at it is we already have one built in. Like, we know it's a two-minute warning, then we're going to have a TV timeout, you know. And so I think that's going to be good. You know, it'll change a little bit. You know, I feel like you got an extra timeout early in the early in the third quarter or early in the fourth quarter that you're going to be able to possibly use one if you need it. Because we really like to have three timeouts, you know, going into the 2 minute, 1 minute area. So I think that's good.
And I think that last point that he made there for teams is going to be just huge. And it kind of bails out some coaches that waste timeouts because you don't have your team organized, or you for whatever reason you're trying to stop momentum of the other team, and you've got to take that timeout, you know, early in the third quarter. I mean, there have been times where, you know, pretty early in the third quarter, not with this regime but previous regimes, where it felt like we're calling timeout and going, geez Louise, man, we're not going to have any timeouts when we need them. And so at least now, you know, as you're kind of driving down there, you can kind of plan for that. You know, two-minute warning, if you're trying to come up with a, you know, a late drive, or even know that you've got to get a stop, you know that they're going to get a two-minute warning there. So I love it. I think it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, I just, as I said before, I just think it gives the offensive team a better chance to, you know, to be able to score in that situation. Or if you're the team on defense that's needing to, you know, get a stop and then and get the ball back and try to score, you know, it forces a clock stoppage, which gives you a better chance to be able to score. So it's put in there, then, and it helps both offenses depending on who has the ball.
Yeah. So last year, the most significant change was the clock continuing to run after first downs unless the chains move inside the last 2 minutes of play of the first or the second half. It's becoming more and more like the NFL clock. It almost makes you wonder, why don't they just adopt the NFL clock altogether?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, in this era of, you know, where people are like watching the clock going, okay, tick tock, tick tock, tick tock, tick tock, I can't sit here more than 3 hours. You know, that certainly helps with the NFL game, because the NFL games aren't going. If they're going right at 3 hours, it's a little under three in a lot of cases. And the college game might be, you know, three and a half or more. At least it was, you know. And I think they significantly reduced some time there just because of how the clock was being run there in this past year as opposed to previous years. Somebody said this, it may bail out coaches, but Mike McCarthy still screws up clock management with a 2 minute warning. He does seem to do that. I don't know why, but he's just has a hard time figuring out, hey, I got three, it'd be nice to be able to use some of those in the winning moments of the game. Syntex Hank says this, Jamie, you don't have peanuts and Cracker Jack close by when you're calling the games?
I do not.
Okay. Trail
Cracker
mix?
Jack might be a really bad thing to eat if you're broadcasting the game.
Yeah.
Because it can have a tendency to get stuck in places.
Definitely trail mix a good amount.
Mm-hmm. Somebody want to know, is it 2 minutes at the end of the half or at the 5 minute mark? It's 2 minutes. It's 2 minutes to go, or as close as they can get to that.
Chuck, that was sarcasm.
Oh, okay.
2 minute warning. 5 minute. I think they were needling you a little
needling
bit.
Needling me? Okay, that's fair. That's okay. I mean, I won't be the first time that I haven't gotten something. You know, I've told you guys time and time again that I'm not the. I'm a knife in the drawer. May not always be the sharpest knife in the drawer.
Okay.
You know, and I'm. I'm
hey, everybody. I mean, we need to spread butter too, right? Toast. You know, we don't have everything. Doesn't have to be super sharp.
No. No. Uh-huh. No, it doesn't. Doesn't everything. Now, of course, you know, we get, you know, a number of, you know, people just weigh in now.
Is it 2 1-minute warnings? Is right, that how it works?
Yeah. Is it 2 minutes or Arkansas? You know, you make one mistake and people just latch on to things, Jamie.
Just one.
He's only ever made the one.
Oh, no. I've made plenty in my life. Red Raider 2 Gun says, Chuck, I just spit out my energy drink. I'm sorry. Hopefully you weren't wearing a white shirt. Hopefully you've got a clean one that you've taken with you.
Or the guy across from you is not wearing a white shirt.
Yeah. Right. All those things. 8:22 this morning here on the Morning Drive. Take your thoughts and comments on the Yates Flooring Center chat line. Go to TT973.com for that. Oh, I didn't get to the other thing from the NCAA. With regard to name, image, and likeness, the NCAA has also, said that they passed new rules allowing universities to help athletes find NIL contracts. In exchange, athletes will be required to disclose any NIL deal of more than $600 to their school. The rule would be a first step in the NCAA trying to create transparency for athletic departments regarding their players' financial situation. So basically, this means that, remember, Miami had faced some punishment for getting the women's basketball players, Haley and Hannah Cavender, connected with a booster, John Ruiz. Under these new guidelines, that connection would now be legal.
Awesome.
Okay. But hey, $600 or more, athletes would have to report NIL deals within 30 days of receiving them. The rules still bid pay for play compensation and direct payment from schools. We are headed to that. And then.
Basically, it's like, it's basically the school calling up Chuck, setting up an appointment with one of their athletes so they can meet in Plainview McDonald's, and Chuck can just give the athlete, write him a check.
Yeah, I guess so.
That's what we're talking about, right?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't think you have to go to Plainview because there's nothing to hide here, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can do it at one of the Lubbock area McDonald's.
Yeah. Or any.
I feel so sorry for Plainview. They didn't do anything wrong. Yeah. They're just sitting up there.
So, yeah, you can go anyway. And it's not McDonald's fault either. I mean, shoot, I'd go there for breakfast too. Yeah, that's what it is. Like, hey, let me connect you with this person that will pay you money.
Mm-hmm.
Because you keep using this NIL term. I have no idea what it means. Pay for play. Like, hey, well, let me connect you with this person that's going to pay you to play for us.
Yeah. Well, it's not. I mean, they're still insisting that it's not pay for play.
But that's
what it is.
It's a joke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what it is. And I mean, you know, in the meantime, you got schools out there that are trying to raise money to be able to pay the scholarships for these guys. Oh, by the way, you know, at some point in time, to me, at some point in time, if you make above X, then your scholarship, you know, should be limited to what you can receive. But that's not going to happen.
Stop caring. Just stop caring.
Stop caring.
Stop caring. Stop trying to fix it. They got it all figured out.
This has been the Morning Drive Podcast, presented by Cantex Roofing and Construction. Check out our library of TT973 podcasts at TT973.com.